We are now 5 weeks into Easter, the season of resurrection and new life. And 5 weeks in, it's about time to remember that Easter is not simply about Jesus being raised from the dead or Jesus being raised to new life. The Easter story is that Jesus was raised so that you and I might have new life. He returned to the very people who had betrayed him and had forsaken him. The risen Christ blesses his disciples, forgives them, and gives them peace, and then entrusts everything he has to them. The risen Christ returns, not just from the dead, but he returns to us. But Christ does not return enunciating a set of propositions that we are to affirm. I can't recall a moment when Jesus said to his disciples, "Here are five ideals. Believe these things about me." No, what Jesus says is, "Follow me." In the first epistle of John, it does not say that the Christian ought to know about love. We are to love. In today's gospel, Christ does not say that we are to think about him, believe in him. Rather, he says we are to abide in him. Live with him, live in him. We are to follow, to do what he did, to live in the world as he lived. Christianity is not a set of beliefs, principles, or propositions. It's a matter of following. That's why we call it discipleship. Faith in Jesus is not beliefs about Jesus, it's a willingness to follow Jesus. The faith is in the following. We make a mistake to make this into some sort of test of agreement. It's not a matter of how much Christianity can I choke down. Jesus didn't demand that we swallow a dozen philosophical absurdities in order to be with him. Faith in Jesus is a simple willingness to stumble along behind, a willingness to tag along. The faith is in the following. One Saturday, years and years ago, dressed in casual clothes, I stopped at a gas station to fill up the tank of the car. And when I went to pay for the gas, the young, eager, earnest attendant, not knowing that I was a priest, asked me, "Are you a Christian?" Now, this is a question that tends to paralyze Episcopalians. For often we fear that if we answer yes, we're claiming more than we have any right to claim. Do I look like Desmond Tutu? But the poor guy was so nervous, what could I do? I had to say yes. So I told him I was a Christian, and I was grateful that he'd asked. He looked relieved. I'd saved him from having to try to convert me. Being a Christian is not a matter of agreeing with a statement about Jesus or getting your head straight about the meaning of atonement or the virgin birth. The answer is simply yes. I'm trying my best to follow Jesus. I'm his apprentice, his disciple. The faith is in the following. So this morning I ask you, are you a Christian? If you ask someone, are you a carpenter, there would be no need for hesitation. You may not be a carpenter, or you may not be the world's best carpenter or the most experienced woodworker in the world. You've been a carpenter for only 2 weeks or for 20 years. But the evidence that you are or are not a carpenter is simple and self-evident. Are you or are you not disciplining your life to the skills, the insights, the practices of carpentry? Case closed. If I ask you, are you a really good carpenter? Then there might be room for hesitation. You're growing as a carpenter, but you're not perfect. But the hesitation doesn't indicate that you're not a real carpenter. Rather, your hesitation shows that you are a true disciple of carpentry in that you're still growing, still on the way, still being perfected in the tools of the trade. A beginning carpenter is still a carpenter. How often in the Gospels do you hear Jesus criticizing and chastising his disciples? He's exasperated that they don't get the point, that they misunderstand, that they're distracted. But Jesus' criticism of them as disciples doesn't mean they're not real disciples. It means that they're still on the journey, that they're still growing, that they're still on the way. If they'd not committed themselves to following Jesus, there'd be no room for correction. Faith doesn't mean we've arrived. Faith means we've begun. A person who wants to be a carpenter has to apprentice to a carpenter, minding the moves, inculcating the practices, being attentive to the habits of the trade, willing to be corrected by the master until the apprentice becomes what the master is and does what the master does. That is surely what Jesus means when he says, "Follow me." For the truth is that having reduced faithfulness to nothing more than thinking about ideas, we modern Christians are largely indistinguishable from the world. We don't differ from any other Americans in our rates of dysfunction or heartbreak. We don't stand out by our virtue or joy. Christians who lived in times of bloody persecution were so fearless, while we who live in safety are fretful and soft. The saints who came before us prayed constantly, while we are easily distracted. They fasted valiantly, and we feel deprived if there are no donuts at the end of a Sunday morning liturgy. The martyrs forgave their torturers, but my friends' successes rankle me. We've ignored the habits that come from following Christ. Aristotle taught that goodness was not essentially a matter of thinking clearly, using reason and common sense, but rather of having been trained to be good. One must be taught how to be good. Aristotle's chief analogy for learning morality was learning to ride a horse. A person cannot learn to ride a horse by reading a book about horseback riding, or by having parents who know how to ride horses. One learns to ride a horse by watching someone who is good at riding and being led step by step by that person, by imitating the moves. To be on the way means to be, as a disciple, imitating the moves of the master in all that I do. And that's what Christian faith is about. That's why Jesus tells us parables and stories about real life. He talks to us about matters like anger and forgiveness and ordinary injustice and disappointment, the real stuff of life, because he surely meant us to follow him here and now, in this life, not in some other life at some other time. Surely in today's gospel, Jesus commands us to abide in him, to be as much a part of him as a branch is to the vine. We are to live in him, cling to him, draw our life from him, to be a part of him. In the epistle of 1 John, it says, "By this we know that we are to abide in him and he in us, because he has given us his Spirit." The presence of the risen Christ abides in us. You should be able to look at a Christian's life and know that the love we show is a gift of the Holy Spirit in which we abide. The proof is in the pudding. The faith is in the following. As the first epistle of John says, those who say, "I love God," but then fail to live in a loving way are being deceitful. The test is in how they live their lives, not what they say about their lives or their values or their beliefs. The writer Frederica Matthews Green, who has preached from this pulpit, has described something she called this, in describing it, the frosting cycle, comparing us to a person who decides to comfort herself with a can of chocolate frosting. For a while, it tastes very, very good, and she feels better. And then she begins to feel a good bit worse. Submerged in the depths of depravity, what can she do? And then she remembers chocolate makes me feel better. The cycle of consuming just adds to our lousy feelings. It's deliberating to see ourselves as passive, non-reproductive gluttons. But we can't see any other solution than the one our culture gives us: buying, acquiring, seducing, eating, drinking. But our true stature is sabotaged by all of that, because a million self-indulgences don't end up in a person who you respect very much. I know a barber who, after a long day of cutting hair for a living, goes to the hospital and cuts hair for the mentally ill for free. A friend of his is an accountant who, after a long day of solving people's financial problems, goes out to cruise the bars, enjoy drinks, and meet people he's not met before. Both men, the barber and the accountant, are apprentices, people who are serving a larger vision of what life is about, why we're put here. One is attached to Jesus, the other one is trapped in a rat race, a frosting cycle. So the most interesting question to ask them is not the abstract, what do you believe in, but the more concrete, who's got you in tow? Faith is found in the following. The world is right in judging Jesus on the basis of the sort of lives he produces. The only proof we have, the acid test for the truth of Easter morning, is whether or not it's capable of producing lives that are a credit to the master to whom you are apprenticed. Somebody told me about a friend who set out to learn to play the banjo. That was 20 years ago. The fellow's a lawyer by trade, but if you want him to name himself at his best, at his deepest level, a description of who he truly is, he would want to say to you that he was a banjo player. He fell in love with the banjo years ago. Then one summer, he decided he was going to do something about this attraction, so he signed on with a master banjo player, and for a month, he ate and slept and lived the banjo. Returning home, he set aside time every day to practice and play the banjo. Yes, it may have broken up his marriage, but nevertheless, he set exercises by which he could condition his hands. He listened to recordings of famous banjo players. He spent weekends going to folk music conventions to perfect his art. Now, of course, he's not a perfect banjo player. He still misses the odd note here and there, and he's never been asked to play the banjo professionally or for money. But he's as much of a banjo player as he can be. His life has been transformed, changed forever through his art. His daily routine is formed in accordance with the demands of the banjo and its music. And he is a credit to the banjo and what it can do to a person who dares to submit to its demands. He hasn't fully mastered the banjo, but the banjo has gone a long way toward fully mastering him. And when people ask him, "What do you do for a living?" he answers, "I'm a lawyer most of the time, but when I'm at my best, I'm a banjo player." Now, that's the way it is with following Jesus. When you're at your best, it's who you truly are. Amen.